Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the OU's Resiliency Project. It is 7:30, and so I'm going to get started. And nice to see people back, and also nice to perhaps have some new people joining us. I will always review a little bit of what we talked about last time and then share some new content. And always with the goal that you leave here with some concrete tools and some strategies that help you feeling better as parents and better in these difficult and challenging times we find ourselves in. Please feel free during the session tonight to use the chat room, to use the Q&A to post questions. I will try to monitor from them from time to time. And especially even if it's not a question, but a comment that you want me to include something or focus on something that may be unique or particular to your situation that you would find helpful, please let me know. For a lot of the time, I'm going to share my screen, so I may not see your questions right away, but I will get to them eventually. Okay. Hopefully you can see that. So we have together considered different areas of challenge, but I just want to raise the issue as I've spent the past few days speaking both to parent groups and school professional groups about what is happening in our world right this very moment, that we have on our plate the new challenge of schools opening, or in some cases, not opening. Or one case that I heard of last evening, a school opening and then a positive test in the school, and after 5 days, school is now closed. These are challenges both for us and for our children. Think of all of those children excited. I can't wait to go back to school. All of those children, trepidations. I hope I don't have to go back to school. Maybe they'll close again. But whatever a child was wishing, if all of a sudden there was a monkey wrench thrown into the plans, that requires additional readjustment. And that means that we, as parents, not only have to adjust our schedules, our work, our carpools, all of our life that revolves around our children's schedule and needs, but it also means that we have to help our children deal with their disappointments, their anxieties, and the reminder that we are in unpredictable and uncertain times and situations, and that's really challenging. We also are approaching, before we know it, the holidays. And as I get emails about seat assignments, and as various people talk about who they're going to or who they will be with, or what the holidays will be like on their own, it raises all kinds of issues, some of which we'll talk about tonight, because we are going to be talking about family, about extended family. So I just want to put out there that I know that this is not just the new non-normal, as I spoke about the first time. It's not just an extraordinary circumstance. It's an extraordinary situation that right now is like in high gear. It's on steroids because we are in the midst of a huge transition for us and for our children. I've spoken about the fact that there are really four fundamentals that I want to focus on in this series. The first week, we talked about how we can normalize a difficult situation and our children's response to it, how we can accept them where they are, and how we can provide reassurance. Last week, we talked about the role of routine and schedule and how helpful that is for all children all the time, but particularly during a pandemic and a crisis situation. And today, we're going to focus on the four Fs: friends, family, fun, and fuel. Leaving for next week, talking about our personal growth, our family's growth, and our children's growth. Now, needless to say, I put all these things in nice, neat little boxes, but they are not in the real world in boxes, and much of what we're going to talk about tonight will overlap what we've talked about before and certainly connect to what we will talk about next week. And I always have to remember and remind myself and remind parents, and we have to remind our children, that the important fifth basic issue we have to think about is flexibility. And we'll talk a lot more about that next week as well. So let's start with the first F, with friends. And I love this little graphic. I hope you can see it up there in the corner. It says, you know, life is better with friends, and the friends are just three of your own fingers with little faces drawn on them. There certainly have been times during this pandemic that it does feel incredibly isolated, and that yes, life is better with friends, but I really miss seeing them. So we do have to think about what are, you know, what are the silver linings? What are the positive spins we can take on this in the pandemic? And one thing I will tell you is that, at least for me, people have come out of the woodwork. People who were long disconnected, colleagues, friends from previous iterations of my life, and I did the same thing. I did not feel strange about starting an email conversation and reaching out to people that I've not been in touch with for years. It felt really safe. These are unusual, strange times, and I could do that. And so think about, are there people that have kind of gotten lost in your life? You know, whether it is your elementary school friends or people right down the block that you just haven't had much time with recently. And think about reconnecting with those people who are distant, either distant in the time they were in your life, distant it with geography, because again, it's hard to be friendly with someone in California when you're in New York and it's normal life. You can't go to dinner and you can't have a glass of wine together, but guess what? Nowadays, you kind of can, because that's all we're doing is living it online. We also have to think about, how do we create ways to connect with friends, both for ourselves and for our children? We have to think about, particularly for very young children who do not live on their phones. They don't have, you know, Instagram and Snapchat. The little ones, preschoolers, toddlers, children reaching out and contacting their friends independently, we may have to think about, how do we serve as social engineers? How do we create those connections for our child? And part of that will come from thinking about how we create safe or socially distanced togetherness. We've started showing outdoor movies in our backyard and inviting one or two couples over. We jokingly call them our Shabbat play date. If the weather is nice, we will socially distance with someone also, again, in the backyard. These strategies, for those of us in the Northeast, and the Midwest and Northwest, you know, these strategies are good now. They certainly are going to become impossible as the weather changes. But thinking about, what are the socially distanced and safe ways to get together? I happened to be walking in my neighborhood over the summer and saw an ingenious group of a set of friends, two boys who either they live next to each other or a few houses apart, but one was sitting on one lawn and the other was sitting on another lawn, much more than 6 feet apart, each with their battleship game. And they were saying, you know, B-59, sunk, hit. You sunk, that sunk my battleship. Battleship was the perfect game for social distance. You don't want to be near each other's boards. You don't want to see them. And yet they were totally and utterly engaged with each other. Obviously, you can't have a catch like that. You can't play a game of you know, tackle or touch football or, you know, freeze tag in that way. So we're going to help our children the same way we're figuring out, how can we do this? How can we be together with people socially in a safe way? We're going to have to help our children and make suggestions of how they do that. We may need and even want to leverage technology. And again, things I would never have done before, the Jacob's Pillow dance festival. I saw something online that they're having a dance class for families on a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And I just sent it off to members of my family and said, do we all want to dance together on Friday afternoon? Let's take this class. And it was adorable to be able to see grandchildren and others on the same screen, all engaged in the same activity, which even though we could not talk to each other during the activity, we had a way to connect afterwards. We could get on the phone afterwards and say, was that fun? Did you like that part? So think about, again, as adults with your own friends, or for your children, might you facilitate joining an online class together, doing an online project together? So many schools have done, and camps have done amazing things, and shuls, group holidays, and let's do an art class online together, and let's do a project together. Each one of us, here's your materials, here's your kit in advance. And again, as adults, we can create the kit with all of the ingredients for your child to make the cupcakes and somebody else to make cupcakes at their house and then hold them up and share them. Not impossible to do it with people who are close enough to do that in our neighborhood. Sorry, we went backwards. Does that sometimes? Here's some of the challenges, however, in dealing with friendships as we move forward and as we deal with this crisis. Friendships, adult friendships and child friendships, they take energy. We've lost, in our current pandemic situation, we've lost all the casual socialization opportunities we have. We can't schmooze on our way to or from shul. We don't meet people casually while we're leaving a program or a class. We don't happen to be bowling at the lane, you know, right after you or before you, and we take a few minutes and have a conversation. Even in the supermarket, we're wearing masks. Most of us, at least in my area, we try to be in and out as efficiently as possible and not congregate. So it now takes energy to be with friends. It takes picking up a phone, reaching out, making a plan, getting those kits together, registering together for a class. And frankly, many of us are feeling somewhat depleted these days. We're tired of living in our bubbles, and it is hard to rally the energy. All I can say, and we'll talk more about this later, we have to think about friendship and the work we do to engage with friends, not as an energy depleter, but we have to think of it as fuel in the tank, as money in the bank, because we know from very careful research, whether you're a child or an adult, friendships are powerful insulators from life's traumas and challenges. Children who have friends deal much better with hurdles and challenges when they come up. Children with friends do better in school. Adults with friends have fewer health crises and live longer. If you don't have a friend, get one. It's good for your health. And so we have to invest the energy, even though we may be feeling somewhat depleted. I've already talked about this next point. We have to think about, for children, how do we engineer social connections in relative isolation? How do we can't just, you know, go to the park and expect we're going to meet up with people. Because even if there are other people, we're going to be socially distanced for safety reasons. So we have to think carefully about how do we provide our child with social opportunities. And even if you have many siblings at home, that's wonderful. It is much easier if a child has siblings to socialize and is not an only in the home who's all by themselves. But sibling relationships they don't serve the same purpose as friendships. And we still need to help our children develop friendships outside our family. There's going to be a challenge here in that as we connect with others and as we reach out to be that social engineer, we are going to notice that different families have different rules and comfort levels and safety parameters. So your child may say, I want to go to Shira's house. I want to play with Shira, but you know that you're not comfortable with the level of precautions that Shira's family is taking. You know that they're in a high-risk profession, they're not being careful, they're seeing more people socially, for whatever reason, you may not feel comfortable. Or in the opposite direction, you may be much more relaxed and say, oh, if my child goes and plays at Shira, she's going to get all nervous because they're wearing masks in the house. They're washing their hands, not for 20 seconds, but for 320 seconds. And I don't want to expose my child to that way of thinking about or living with the virus. So we're going to have to think about that. And this is an opportunity. It's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity for us to do what we've sometimes done incredibly well in the Jewish community. And that is to help our children learn that there are lots of different ways that Jews can look, and lots of different ways that Jews can pray, and lots of different ways that Jews can eat and celebrate holidays and have their traditions, but we still respect each and every one of them. And our way, which may be right for our family, we have no right to say it's required for their family. So in the same way, we've helped our children navigate homes where we may not allow them to go for Shabbat or for an overnight because of kashrut concerns or religious concerns, but we've always done it with respect and without in any way denigrating the other family. We can do the same thing now, saying in our house, we wear masks when we're outdoors and Shira's family does not. So for now, we're going to try to play and have play dates with families that feel the same way about masks as we do. Every family is allowed to have their own rules, but we're gonna play with families. We're gonna get together with families that have the same rules. For adolescents, this is going to be very, very challenging because they want and often do developmentally make their social decisions independent of you. The worst thing in the world is for a parent to tell an adolescent who their friends can and cannot be. It's, by the way, a guarantee that they will go running to the very person you don't want them to be friends with that you've verbalized. Making it forbidden fruit only makes it that much more attractive. So with our adolescent children, we're going to have frank conversations that say, I hope you're going to respect the family rules in order to have the kind of freedom that I would like you to have at your age. But I need you to be safe. There are other people in the family. You need to respect everyone here. And we need to know that if you're out and about, you're going to wear a mask. We also, with our teenagers, can talk about what will you do? It may very well happen that you're out and about wearing your mask and one of your buddies, good old pals, says, what are you wearing the mask for? You know, we don't need masks anymore. Come on, man. It's not so uncool. I want to see your face. How do we help our children figure out, our teens figure out how to navigate those difficult social situations and say, and by the way, one recommendation is let your teenagers use you as the fall guy. Say, oh, my parents will kill me. You know, they have spies everywhere. They're watching. They're probably watching everybody's Ring cameras and they know whether I have my mask on or not. You know how grounded I'll get? You know how much trouble I'll be in? Or you know how nervous my mother is? She'll have a heart attack if I take my mask off. Listen, don't hock my chinook. Let me just, you know, get along with my family. Don't give me a hard time. But we have to give them the practice at figuring out how they're going to do this. Some of the same challenges are going to face us, and some of the same opportunities are going to present themselves when it comes to dealing with family. Although, you know, that people say, what's the definition of family? You know, there are people who have to take you in no matter what. Even in a pandemic, they have to connect with you. And there is tons of research about the positive power of connection with members of our family. Think about how we leverage technology to do that. I know that during the pandemic, I've had family calls, you know, family Zoom calls and family Zoom events, special parties and celebrations with members of the family that in actual time and space, I would never have connected with just because they couldn't have made the trip or because generationally they're too young or too old, they're not my demographic and we don't usually connect. But Zoom brought us together. So think about how you leverage that technology. And I have in my family, and I've seen other families have unbelievably creative ways of connecting, from Zoom birthday parties, Zoom, we've played Boggle on Zoom, we've played Bingo on Zoom, we've played Kahoot on Zoom, we've played all kinds of family competitive games on Zoom, and as well as just schmoozing and getting together. So it's a wonderful way to use the technology in the best way possible. And, you know, if you ever want to watch a very funny bit, just watch the Israeli, it has subtitles, but it's an Israeli man trying to teach his mother, an elderly woman, how to Zoom. And, you know, we've had very fun times teaching all generations how to leverage the technology. Consider the fact that sometimes the best technology technologies are old technologies. Think about the power of a phone call to a grandchild, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a cousin, especially when it's not expected, when you don't usually do it. Think about the really old technology of sending mail. I tell the story all the time that when graduation could not happen this year in its traditional way, and I could not celebrate the unbelievable Jewish educators at the Azrieli Graduate School, where I'm privileged to be dean, who are devoting their lives to teaching and to leading in Jewish day schools and Jewish educational settings, I wanted very much to share my personal thanks. And so I went to the dollar store and bought out, probably 65 graduation cards and hand-wrote notes to my students. Many of them are very young people, and we're like, oh my gosh, a card, a real card? And then it's handwritten from the dean. I got emails thanking me for those simple little cards. So think about, what do you send? Do you draw a picture for a grandchild? Do you take a picture and actually print it out and put it in an envelope and send it to someone, not just on a computer? But think about old technology. The novelty of it sometimes makes it incredibly special. There are going to be stresses and challenges. We have issues in families, not only of geographic distance, but of emotional distance. There are roadblocks and hurdles that are difficult to get over. And sometimes we do have to divide and conquer. Sometimes we can't do a Zoom chat with everyone in the family because nobody is heard, or the family conversation hog takes over and nobody else gets to connect. And so you may have to have different segments that connect together in different ways. We also have the challenge in families that because we are different generations, because we are made up of different individuals with different medical, psychological, temperamental makeups, that we have different levels of risk, that we have different, you know, there may be some people who are very comfortable with, well, we'll come over and we'll sit in the backyard and we'll be socially distanced, and others who will be very uncomfortable at the thought of being within, never mind 6 feet, of 50 feet of anyone because of their own risk factors. The different passages refers to the fact that family issues always bubble up around celebrations. And now, in the pandemic, when celebrations have had to be radically adjusted, it can become extraordinarily challenging to navigate and negotiate the different ways that family members getting the feelings of family members. I had somebody recently who said something to me along the lines of, well, I know it's only a 50-person wedding, and I know that there are COVID rules, but I can't believe they didn't invite me to the real simcha. And I think we all have to be incredibly aware that whoever, you know, has the bracha of being a balei simcha now is dealing with enormous challenges of how do we include people, how do we make both the chatan and kala, the bar mitzvah, the graduate, whoever we're celebrating, the 90-year-old, how do we make them feel surrounded by the love and care and celebration of everyone when we can't all be in the room together? Some very specific ideas for building family connection. And I would love in the chat room, please share anything you've tried, anything you've done that works. Think about doing a family tree. Think, you know, with online portals and online sharing, whether it's something as simple as a Google Doc that everybody contributes to, or whether it's one of the commercial programs where you can build a family tree and everybody has the link so that they can post their picture, they can put any details they know. But think about it as a family project, as a way to connect people and talk about how are we connected and who remembers this person's name or that person's place of birth. The other thing is, in building family connections, we not only need connections as adults, but as parents, it's our job to keep our children connected to the family. Normally, we would do that by schlepping them. Come, we're going to grandma's house. Come, we're going to Aunt Sadie. Now we're going to go to visit Uncle Joe in the hospital. That's how we would keep the family in their mind and in their, you know, in their mental working so that they feel a part of it. But now we can't bring them to visit Uncle Joe or Aunt Sadie or Grandma or Grandpa. So one way we can keep our children connected to family is by take out some photo albums and reminisce. Make it a family ritual or routine that this is what we do Shabbat afternoon. We look at some pictures. Or this is our Tuesday night. We pick a photo album and we go through it. And maybe, I'm connecting ideas now, maybe we find a picture of someone in the album that we make a card for or write a letter to, just to connect to them. Think about family legacy projects. My own family, we started something, my mom's name is Sunny, we started Sunny Stories. When I saw an ad on Father's Day on Facebook advertising that this company, a for-profit company, would write your family's stories. Basically, you give them your father's email, they'll send your father a question every week, and at the end of the year, they'll compile your father's answers into a book, and next Father's Day, you'll have a book of his life to present to him. I thought, well, nobody knows my family the way I do. Why would I have a stranger send the questions to my mom, who happens to love to write? And I engaged actually the entire extended family and created an email distribution to every living relative that I could and said, who would like to ask questions of a family historian, of someone who's been in our family perhaps the longest and remembers all of us when we were young and the people in our lives that we love and have loved. And every few days, someone in the family sends me a question to forward to our resident historian, and her answer then gets sent out to the whole family. And it's been wonderful for us to hear the history of our family and to engage in something together that also has a benefit of keeping an elderly relative who does not have the ability to get out and travel right now connected to the family. Think also about whether your family together might engage in a chesed project, whether it is we're going to sew masks together, or we're going to package food or supplies or snacks for frontline workers. And again, the family unit can be who lives in the house with you, or it could be my family here, and then the family in New Jersey, and the Connecticut family is doing it, and this family is doing it. But we're all engaged in the same project, and it's a way to connect and a way to share and talk about what our experiences, what worked, what didn't work. It's just a way to build on conversation and to bridge the distance. I'm just going to stop sharing for a moment so I can see any comments. Okay. Great question. What if there are literally no other families in your community acting safely? How can you create opportunities for your children to be social? It's going to sound strange, but first of all, you can certainly do it online. So you can look for ways to connect online. We're going to take a class together with a friend. It's an opportunity to say, remember that couple we met, that family we met on vacation in another place? I've stayed in touch with them. Remember you loved playing with their kids? Let's have a virtual play date. Let's get together and we'll do a challah bake together, or we'll do a watch party and watch an age-appropriate movie together. So we can do that. The other thing is, I'm finding, I live in a large metropolitan area. There are pockets. So there may be a community that is being very careful, right next to it, one that is not, then another one that is. And so within a short drive, I can go to places where I'm literally terrified by what I see, and places where I say, it's just like in my neighborhood, people are being careful, people are respectful, and I feel comfortable here. It may be that you have to think about, if I don't feel comfortable with an after-school activity or a social gathering place in my community because my community is not being mindful, what is there a place I might drive to that is not that, you know, it's not a horrible hardship, where I might be able to find connections for my child. But it is unfortunate. On the other hand, there's a piece of this that isn't new. You know, I remember my children are grown, but I remember hearing from my children the famous line that almost every parent hears at some point. But every other family lets. In my case, it was about TV or about R-rated, you know, PG-13 movies or something that I was being, you know, and my husband, we were strict about, and other families were not so strict about. And the answer was, I understand how frustrating that is for you, but this is what our family believes, and this is what our family does. And it's interesting to hear what other families do, but that's not who we are. That's not the Novik way. You know the Novik way. This is our way. And by the way, it's wonderful, absolutely wonderful gift to your children to find ways to be proud of who your family is and what they do. And so that it's not just that it's the Novik way that we're strict and we say no to these things, but also it's the Novik way that we take amazing hikes, don't we? We are like incredible hikers. It's the Novik way that we are unbelievable Boggle players. Like there are certain things that we carry as the badge of honor. I just thought, you know, what an interesting activity for a family day, for your own family together, to kind of create your family flag, your family crest, your family nickname, your family mascot, as if you are a team, because really we are. We are a team. In our little bubbles, we are very much a team. Okay, fun. How do we, in these difficult times, ensure, because ladies and gentlemen, we need fun in our lives. Even in dark moments, even in challenging times, we need fun. How do we do that? And particularly in families, whether we have, again, one child or 10 children, we have multiple people in the house, us and them. And fun is individual. What I think is fun, one of my children told his math teacher that when he brought home a math puzzle, and to be a good, engaging, and encouraging mother, I said, oh, I love that puzzle. That's wonderful. I actually hate math. I'm math phobic. I'm terrible with math. But he went and told his teacher that my mother loved that puzzle. And then she started sending me puzzles constantly. And he'd come home and say, Ma, Ima, we have more math puzzles to do. Isn't that great? Oh, yes, it's just wonderful. The individual nature of fun is that it isn't necessarily the same fun for you as for your children. It isn't necessarily fun for one child because it's fun for another child. And our job as parents is to navigate that and find the sweet spot where everybody has some fun, where there's compromise. Maybe we do this in the morning and that in the afternoon. We do this this weekend and next weekend we do that so that everybody has some fun. There is endless research on the positive power of laughter and of fun. So how do we inject it? You know, we can't all rent bouncy slides and hire comedians. So how do we inject it into our lives? Some very specific ideas. Novelty is fun. It is fun when something is unusual. It's not so unusual now what I'm going to say next, but I was going to say pajama day, Sunday. We don't get dressed. We spend the whole day in pajamas. Not so unusual. People are living in pajamas these days. But novelty. We're having dinner for breakfast and breakfast for dinner. It's novelty. We are going to all wear red today. Today is the red day. We're going to wear red. We're going to eat red. And we are going to read books about red. And we're going to watch movies with fire trucks in them because they're red. It's just, I'm making it up as I go along. Novelty also happens when we do role reversal, which also is fun. I'll be the student, you be the teacher. I'll be the child, you be the parent. It can be a lot of fun when we give our children the opportunity to take on our roles. Novelty is off. I also gave examples of off-schedule novelty, you know, breakfast for dinner, et cetera. New rituals can be fun. Deciding, we have a new September challenge. We're going to do a family September challenge. I started in our family way before the pandemic, but it just happened that on Hanukkah, we weren't going to be able to be together 1 year. We were all in different continents, states, countries, etc. And we created a Hanukkah competition that was done totally online where you had to post this picture on this day and that picture on that day and you earned points. And it was just a way to engage people in something that was fun and that was shared. Think about whether you can create something new. And friendly competition is also fun. I'll beat you two. I bet you can't. Who do you think can do the most of? All of those things can take normal, everyday circumstances and sometimes even challenging circumstances and imbue them with something a little bit more exciting and fun. I find, again, the level of creativity that I'm seeing in schools amongst parents. Find, if you're not already connecting to parent websites, parent WhatsApp groups, where people share these ideas, you should. Because sometimes you just read things and say, oh my gosh, it's so simple, but I wish I had thought of that. I'm going to borrow that. I'm going to do that with my family and my children. And the other thing is that's where you're going to find that there's a free art class at noon. There's a doodle contest at, you know, 10 o'clock. And figure out how you're going to engage everybody and have everybody participate. Oh, before I leave fun, I just want to talk about, and we're going to get to this a little bit when we talk about fuel, but you have to think about what's fun for you and how do you find time for it, especially if your children are at home. And even as your children go back to school, maybe those hours are used for work for you. Maybe those hours are just used for catch up, but you have to think about what is fun for you and that it may not also be the same as fun for your spouse. And you have to figure out a balance between, or your partner, you have to figure out a balance between family fun, adult fun, couple fun, and find room for all of it in a time when time is a prime commodity. Okay, what do I mean by fuel? I mean the things that allow us to keep going in this difficult, challenging time. But frankly, all parenting requires fuel. We get burnt out. It's 24/7, 365. It is constant. And so we need to think fuel. And the basic question we have to think about is biology. We are, you know, the same way that a car can't run without gas and oil, we cannot run without sleep. many people are talking about disturbed sleep during the pandemic. Our schedules are off. Many people are having difficulty sleeping. I understand, but think about your sleep hygiene. Think about whether you're getting enough sleep. And if you are not, think about how you remedy that. Because it, when we are sleep deprived, we are not good cognitively and we're not good affectively. In other words, our thinking is slower and less effective, and our mood is more irritable and volatile. You do not want to be a parent who thinks slow and who has an irritable mood. That's not a good combination for a parent. We want to be sharp and we want to be on an even keel. That's the best place for a parent to be. Now, I can't believe that this is true because I am not a person who loves exercising, but we have to push ourselves to exercise and be physically active. It's in capital letters because it's so important. Exercise is the brain's natural stress buster. Even mild exercise for 15 to 20 minutes will cause the release of endorphins in the brain, which are the best biochemicals to help us manage stress. Never mind the fact that they're just, it's good for our health. And we have to also think about our eating. You know, people are talking about the pandemic pounds, the pandemic 15, the 15 pounds people have put on. We are not, and many people are going to snack foods and to not the best choices. So we have to think really carefully. And again, it takes time, but invest in the time and energy it takes to have healthy food options available. Also, we have to think about our biology, that we are not, human beings are not meant to be alone. Hashem understood this in Bereshit, right at the beginning. He got it. It is not good for man to be alone. He knew that we are social animals, but we also need some alone time. We also need our personal space. We also need some quiet away from partner, spouse, extended family, children. And we have to fuel ourselves by being sure that we get some of both, some connection, but also some time on our own. There's been some talk, and people know about this notion that in a time of crisis, the initial response is what's called a surge. We have a surge of energy. We have enormous amount of fuel. It's why we have these stories of, God forbid, a car is on a child and a parent lifts it. That's the surge of energy. That's how we rally our resources. It's how when the storm Isaiah came and we had to schlep down trees and we had to make sure that our neighbors were safe, we all rallied and we did what we needed to do. Great. The problem is that we can't maintain that surge fuel forever. It burns down as the crisis continues. And people are beginning to write now about the fact that we're fatigued because of the amount of time that we have been living in the pandemic. And this is true for us and for our children as well. We may find we're kind of, you know, slowed down. We're not getting done the things that we had thought we would or hoped we would. And we have to give ourselves permission. These are unusual times and it's okay. We also need to set reasonable expectations. And if you have a list of 10 things that you're going to do today, you're doomed to failure. If you say, Bli neder, this one thing I'm doing, then you can be successful. But I also want to suggest or make you aware of something called the barrel theory of anxiety, which suggests that all of us have within us kind of a holding barrel that can take worries, and we can put worries in, and we can manage them as long as there's room in the barrel for another worry. At some point, however, the barrel is filled to the top, we can see if we put one more drop of worry in the barrel, what's going to happen? We're going to overflow. What that means is that part of our job of fueling ourselves is finding ways to get rid of some of that anxiety in the barrel so that if other challenges come along, we will not overflow. We will not be awash in anxiety or worry. We'll be able to move forward. How do we fill the tank? Again, it's personal. I love doing craft projects, and there are some days that I say, I'm taking 2 hours, I'm cleaning off the table, and I'm taking out my stuff. I got to make something. I have to make something or I'm going to go crazy. There are other people who would find absolutely no pleasure in that. There are some people whose hobbies are running. Not me. I'll never get pleasure in that. I'll do it, but it's not something that I get, that I'm passionate about or that's a hobby. So we have to think about what is it? And we also have to think for our children. What is it that fills their tank? Do I have a Lego builder? And for that Lego builder, do I rotate my Lego supplies so that when he needs or she needs her tank filled, I've got new material, fresh stuff to build, or I've downloaded online some guides to use your Legos at home to build something magical or special. So we have to think about our children's hobbies and passions too. When we think about our tank fillers, we have to think cognitive versus affective. Cognitive meaning brain stuff, crossword puzzles, that might fill my tank. Solving a good problem might fill my tank. Thinking about something or going to a shear or listening to a shear, that might fill my tank in terms of my cognitive tank. But it may not do anything with my kind of affective, affects is your feelings and your moods, but it may not uplift me spiritually, emotionally, affectively. I may need to walk and look at flowers. I may need to take some pictures of the sunset. I may need watching a movie that pulls my heartstrings or makes them soar. And again, the same for our children. We can fill the tank and we build in novelty when we balance. We did some thought activities, and now we're gonna do some feeling mood activities. We're not gonna sit in one area all the time. We can also think about passive versus active. Passive is I watch something, I listen to something, I see something, versus active, I make something, I do something, I engage with someone. And it's good to have a blend to fill my tank because there are going to be times when I can't be active. If I say what fills my tank is always going for a run outside and looking around the neighborhood at all the pretty flowers, well, I can't do that when it's pouring rain. I mean, I guess I could, but it's not very fulfilling. So it's good to have some things that are passive as well as active. We have two tasks when it comes to filling the tank for us and for our children. We have to find tank fillers. We have to discover what they are, and we have to stock our homes and our schedule with those things that we can do. If I know I love knitting and I'm all out of wool, then I have to, you know, go online and order some wool so that I have it here at the ready. If my child loves books and the library is closed now and I can't take out books, then I have to think about who is lending, who can I reach out to, who could I do a book swap with? Our community started a WhatsApp group of book swapping, and I'm telling you, there are probably 30 emails a day saying, I have this, does anyone want it? I finished this, does anybody want it? There's a stack of books outside such and such address, take them, they're yours. And it's been wonderful. It really has allowed the readers in the community to share. But it's not enough for us to find them. Then we have to be sure we use them. It does no good to stock up on jigsaw puzzles if they're sitting in the closet and you never do them because I'm too busy. I have to clean, I have to straighten, I have to do this, I have to help with the homework, We have to figure out how do we find time in our really challenging day and schedule to do that. We have to also think about ourselves and our spouses or partners. We're talking about fuel, so I'm asking, what's your miles per gallon? Are you a fuel for others, or are you emptying their tank? Are you a drain on their energy, or are you fueling them? Think about something as simple as compliments as fuel. If you say to your spouse, you did a wonderful job with, gratitude, thank you so much for, it's fantastic in filling somebody's tank. But there is no substitute for time, and we have to find time for the adults in our lives, for our partners and our spouses. We have to realize that we also need to be open to sharing, which is not the same as agreeing. Through this pandemic, there are going to be ups and downs for each of you, and they may not be in sync. There are going to be times when your partner is down and needs you to be their pick-me-up, and vice versa. There are going to be times when you're raring to go and feeling great, and you're sitting next to a sad sack. You don't have to agree with them. What you have to do is be open and share and say, looks to me like this is a rough patch for you. You know what? I'll take the kids. You don't feel up to socializing. It's okay. I can handle this. Or I can handle it, so we'll change our plans, but I see that you're really, you know, not feeling it right now. Thank you so much. I want to check to see if there are, I'm going to stop my screen share now so I can see if there are other questions. I do not see questions in the chat. I do not see questions in the Q&A, but we have a few minutes. Any closing thoughts or questions? And I would love people to use the chat to tell me first of all, what is your, I love this. What fills your tank? Please use the chat to tell me what fills your tank. And someone spends Shabbat afternoon playing board games together. I'm also an avid game player. And one of my challenges is that my game partners are my grown children, and they are not able to be with me on Shabbat. So I've lost my game partners. With some things we can do online, but obviously not on Shabbat afternoon. Do I have suggestions for helping kids find their fillers? Example, hobbies that are not extravagant. Sure. One suggestion is just, you know, you try things with them based on what you know about them. You know, if you know someone is a Lego builder and loves building and putting things together, Legos are not an inexpensive hobby, but you may find alternative building things, or you might find websites or web games where they're building that are not expensive, or you might find another puzzle kind of game or puzzle book if your library is open, out of your library. You might begin to study architecture and look at how things are built. There may be other ways to relate to it, but it helps to know what kids like. And I agree that some kids know what they like, is the comment someone's making. Others are not as forthcoming. For kids who are not forthcoming, I love saying to them, I want to do a science experiment together. But it's not a science experiment about something else. It's a science experiment about you. I want to try to figure out what you like most. And so this week, every day, or every week this month, every Sunday, we're going to try something and we're going to give it a rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, you know, 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, and we're going to see what are the things that are 5 stars for you. The other thing to keep in mind, by the way, is there are some kids who will never be a 5-star of anything just because they're not a positive, they're more tentative. There are other kids who will never start anything as a 5-star. So the first time they do something, it was a 2. you have to do it again. You have to try it again and say, let's try it. Let's tweak it a little bit. You didn't love baking, or you didn't love those coloring books. You know, they make now all these adult coloring books. You didn't like, I don't mean that they're for adults, but they're not kiddie coloring books. They're intricate designs to color. You didn't like that coloring so much. Let's try this project instead. You didn't love doing something that had to do with sports. Let's try doing something that has to do with reading. And just try different things. Tie dyeing is an amazing suggestion. You have to be willing to be messy. And that also, you know, we all have to like loosen up and think about, you know, I might be the kind of person who normally I like everything just so in the kitchen, and I don't want the kids in the kitchen because it's quicker to do it myself. Well, it might be, but maybe they would make some meatballs. And maybe they would, you know, cut the vegetables for soup. Or maybe they would, maybe we could have a kugel cook-off where this Friday everybody makes a kugel and then we vote on whose is the best. You know, there are all kinds of things that we can do by trying, and we won't know. There are some children who have just such a clear affinity. They love to read, and you know it. And you know that they love it. They love sports, and you know it. And then there are other children that they're kind of, everything's okay, but nothing really seems to get them terribly excited. That's okay too. What may fuel them, and by the way, I'm so glad that I rambled enough to get to this. Sometimes what fuels them is time with us, is direct contact with us. It's a tickle fest. It's a hug party. It's sitting on, sitting on your lap and hearing a book, or having you tell them a story that you make up. Creating something just for them is amazingly powerful. Telling them the story of King so-and-so, who is their name, you know, their name is Max, King Max, or, you know, Queen Jenny, because this is, you're talking to your little girl, Jenny, but making a story up that's about them, engaging them in the process is amazingly powerful. For older children, it is sometimes extremely powerful to join them in what they like, especially when they know we don't like it. For example, teens think it's amazing and sometimes a little kooky if you'll listen to their music with them and maybe even dance with them to their music. Not your music, not something you like, but listen to what they like. If you'll read, do a book club together with a teen, reading what they like to read. They may be reading, I don't know, science fiction. It's not your thing at all, but read it, share that, and do book club together. It's wonderfully engaging for them, and it's a great way to fuel their tank. It also gives you a chance as a parent to see a side of your child, of them engaged in something they love and they're passionate about, which you don't always get to see. Well, we've come to the end of our time together. Thank you all so much for joining. Next week is our last week together, and we will tackle how in these really difficult times, we make certain that we do probably the most important job we have as parents, and that is we grow our children. Parenting is not a stagnant profession. We have to keep moving and keep growing, and we have to figure out how we help our children do that too. Stay safe. Have a great week. These really difficult times, we make certain that we do probably the most important job we have as parents, and that is we grow our children. Parenting is not a stagnant profession. We have to keep moving and keep growing, and we have to figure out how we help our children do that too. Stay safe. Have a great week.